there, boys and or girls, or whatever gender identification you subscribe to. Welcome to the first episode of the second season of Infield Chatter, the only Arizona Diamondbacks podcast you happen to be listening to right now, I assume, because you could be listening to two Arizona Diamondbacks podcasts right now, and that would be weird. But if it works in a sort of weird Pink Floyd, Wizard of Oz way, let us know. I am Clefo, I have a real name, and it's easy to find, but to hell with that. I'm joined by two scoundrels, the co-hosts, the same as last year. Joining us from beautiful and shiny Las Vegas, Nevada, and I pronounce Nevada right, is Devin Jessup. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, and I want you to know that however you pronounce Nevada or Nevada, it's probably wrong. Somebody's going to be unhappy with you.
Nevada?
Okay, you got the one that's perfect. I take it back. Las Vegas, Nevada.
Las Vegas. No, okay.
It's like pronouncing Oregon. They may say Oregon. They may say Oregon, but it's Oregon.
Actually, it's pronounced Las Vegas. joining us also from, not from Las Vegas, so I don't know why I had the also there. Maybe because they're also joining us? I'm kind of winging it right now. Where are they? Scottsdale. That's right. Scottsdale. We have Soko. How's it going, Soko?
It's going pretty good. I admit I was not really listening to the intro because I was also listening to the pool shot on my other speaker.
Did it blow your mind?
It did. Listening to two Diamondbacks podcasts at the same time is the new market inefficiency.
A lot of things have happened in the offseason. The Diamondbacks did a lot of things. Pretty much everyone had a musician they really liked die. That's about it. Those are the only two things that happened in anything. We're just going to sort of work through the sort of major points of the Diamondbacks offseason in our own way, because you've probably heard or read about it ad nauseum, but, you know, we have our own little spin to them. So the first major thing that happened with the Diamondbacks in the offseason wasn't any sort of, like, transaction or anything like that. They decided that after, you know, eight seasons of the Sedona Red and Sand and Black and, you know, whatever, that they decided to have a new uniform concept, which is like, hey, cool, that's a thing. So it was, I can't remember the exact day, it was sometime in like late October, early November that the Diamondbacks unveiled new uniforms, and boy, were they ever new.
They are certainly new.
It was actually early December, December 3rd.
Wow, I'm way. Do I know where I am right now? I don't know.
It was never established. In case you don't know, Clefo is joining us from not as shiny Tucson, Arizona.
It's not gloss or semi-gloss, but whatever's satin, that's what
satin.
It is. Yeah. Paint jokes, huh? So, you know, it's not flat. It's not Sierra Vista or, you know,
Yuma.
But, you know, it's not glossy. But anyway, so yeah, the new uniforms. You probably have a good idea of what they look like now. But, you know, they have the sort of gradient pattern on the shoulders and the back of the legs. And they're of sort of clashing colors in one variant of a teal and a red. But I guess, you know, we'll start with you, Devin, because that's who I randomly selected in my head. What's your general opinion of, like, the uniforms? Like, how bold they are? Or do you like them? Do you not like them? You know. That sort of thing.
I'm a fan of the new uniforms. I mean, first off, they won me over because if you look at the red alternates or the black alternate uniforms, the red ones have the black gradient at the top and the black have the red gradient at the top, which I feel is pandering directly to me as a Star Trek fan.
Oh, yes.
Because I can pretend that these are Starfleet uniforms and I'm all for that.
Mm-hmm.
I do like the gradient or it's the snakeskin, whatever it does. I feel like it doesn't look as good on the white uniforms, but I think it's pretty cool on all the other ones. And I'll admit I'm kind of coming around to the teal outline with the red lettering.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know why. It's winning me over, but you know, whatever works.
Yeah, I'm actually wearing right now. Can't see it because it's an audio medium. I'm actually wearing a. I bought it like for the money I got for Christmas. I bought a Zach Greinke jersey, which, considering my history of jerseys, means he's going to be traded within 6 months. So sorry about that.
Great. There goes my excitement for the season.
But no, it's black and it has the teal outline with the red letters. And it, on the black background, it actually, you know, doesn't look as like eye searing as it might on the white. But then again, like, this is sort of me looking at it in person rather than, you know, on a screen. So the experience might just sort of translate differently.
They're bold, is all I'll say. It's going to be one of those things that they're either going to keep with it for far too long, and it's going to get to a point where we're like, oh god, remember the teens of the 21st century. Or it's going to fail so hard that they're going to switch in like two seasons.
I have a feeling that there's so many variants of them. Because yeah. with the you know, early 2000s, late 90s throwback, there's 8, I think, if you count a home and away as a different variant.
Yeah.
They might sort of figure out which ones work better than others and mm-hmm. just sort of phase some of them out to, like, never or very rarely. Because people may or may not remember this, but I clearly do. It was when the Diamondbacks first started, you know, in like the 98 season, they had so many weird uniform variants.
Yeah.
They had like a, you know, at least home, they had a home variant where they had the white cap with the purple bill and the teal A logo. They, I swear to God, had a teal hat with the A logo that I think they wore for like one or two games. I remember this. But like, you know, you never really saw that after that season because they just like, oh, the purple with the, you know, sort of, you know, with this uniform, mm-hmm. that seems to be what works better. So I kind of have a feeling that might be sort of what happens.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I don't want to see the Diamondbacks do is become the Oregon Ducks of Major League Baseball, because I'm not entirely positive, but I think if I did the count right, the Oregon Ducks actually change uniforms once every quarter. don't reuse uniforms at any point in the same season.
Mm-hmm.
They've got something like 74 different uniform designs, all from Nike, obviously.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, some of them are really cool. Like, I mean, I did roll my eyes because it's not like Oregon needs another uniform, but they're the Pioneer design uniforms they did, that was like a whole Lewis and Clark thing, and it had maps on it and stuff. It was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you don't need to have as many uniforms as you have games in a season, which would be impressive for the 162 games that the Diamondbacks play, I guess. But I kind of do feel like if limiting it down a little bit might be nice. But like,
and
look, how are the Diamondbacks going to recruit high school kids? They're going up against USC, Texas. Without like 90 million jerseys.
I remember the Arizona ASU football game, and both teams were wearing jerseys that were like Rorschach tests or colorblind tests kind of things.
I just want to know who are these kids who are like, man, I totally want to go play at this college because of the uniform they have. Is that a big draw?
And apparently, I'm not going to claim to be a college recruiting expert because I went to the school in the town I live in, but
what comes down to it, none of us really have the authority to argue with the University of Oregon when it comes to recruiting, but...
Yeah. Yeah.
It's never stopped us before.
That's true. Let's get down to this.
And I will say, the Diamondbacks have never, ever blown a 31-run lead. Recently, that I'm aware of.
That is true.
Screw Oregon. That's what I'd say. But
indisputable.
To have some perspective, at least the Diamondbacks aren't doing what, like, I think every sort of double A or lower minor league team is doing, which is having some very kitschy one-off jersey night.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Okay, wait a minute. I'm going to make an abrupt change in my position here because I freaking love kitschy Jersey Knights for minor league teams. Minor league, we're talking about an entirely different thing here, because minor league baseball team promotions are one of the greatest things about baseball to me.
That's true, yes. That's true, yes. And, you know, I will ride and die for, like, you know, the between innings minor league entertainment. Like, you know, the Dizzy Bat Race, that's a classic.
Yeah. Or like, racing the mascot. Always good.
Oh, I don't think I've told this story on this podcast before, so if I have, apologies, you probably didn't listen to that episode, but I just remember.
I probably didn't.
I definitely didn't.
It was a Tucson Padres game, got around, well, it had to be like 2013, or, yeah, 2013.
They were only in Tucson for, like, 2 years?
3 years, I think, but yeah.
There you go.
They did the race where, you know, a fan starts at home plate, and the mascot, which was basically Padres Friar mascot, just with a different name for some reason,
mm-hmm.
starting at second base, and you know how that goes. The mascot will just, you know, dick around for whatever until sure. the fan overtakes them. The problem is, this fan was really, 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 really slow. So, like, the mascot is just, like, trying to do his thing, but it's like, can't go any slower while this fan is trying to catch him, mm-hmm. and so while he's rounding third, like, the Padres manager, I think it was actually Pat Murphy at the time, came out of the dugout and tackled the mascot so that the fan could win. That was the game I went to go, you know, kind of scout, I say in figure quotes, Tyler Skaggs for a Dick Pitt article. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, I paid to see Trevor Bauer at AAA, and I paid to see Tyler Skaggs at AAA. I'm at peace with them being traded now. It doesn't make me mad, but do you think I should, like, send Kevin Towers an invoice?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Just yeah.
I feel like he definitely owes you some refunds there.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's a AAA ticket, so not too expensive, yeah. but it's just but like...
He should at least give you some RB coupons.
Yeah, of equal value. And that is a lot of Arby's coupons.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Horsey sauce for days.
So what was my original point? Oh, one-off jerseys, because the one I'm thinking of is that I have it in front of me, the Kalamazoo Growlers, I don't know what level, but they're a minor league team in, as you might guess, at Kalamazoo, are having a promotion where they're asking fans to vote for their favorite emojis that will appear on a special emoji jersey this season.
Wow.
Vomit. Vomit emoji right there.
Yeah. Either the vomit, the poop, or the eggplant, which is supposed to be something else.
The nine types of trains that they have.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, there are a lot of train emojis. I'm currently looking at an article, the unique minor league jerseys of 2014, and there are some interesting ones in here. The Norfolk Tides, who are a Baltimore AAA team, apparently wore jerseys that they had like a gnome beard on them, like a garden gnome.
So like the beard itself was sort of started at the collar and
yeah, went down mm-hmm. to roughly belly button, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
As a you know, as somebody who was a child in the 90s, the Brooklyn Cyclones had a Nickelodeon slime uniform, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this Williamsport ugly Christmas sweater jersey, which, I mean, you don't play baseball on Christmas. I'm sorry, guys. Oh my god, there's 61. There's 61 photos in this article. I'm on number 9, so I'm just gonna we're gonna cut this here.
Apparently, Kalamazoo Growlers are a collegiate summer baseball league.
Oh, kind of like the Cape Cod League, but obviously not in Cape Cod, I assume.
Michigan is not in Cape Cod.
We're gonna have a 16 check on that.
You mean us frantically googling while we do this podcast? Because exactly. It's a tradition.
I definitely, yeah. Wow. They in their list of emojis, they have the what's obviously the anthropomorphic poop emoji as pile of chocolate. Which,
Is it chocolate or is it poop? Every parent's dilemma.
Welcome to Arby's.
There's something really sad about Kalamazoo Growlers. The original mascot, they lost the rights to it because of the Hillsborough Hobbs had the same mascot name.
Yeah, you mess with the Diamondbacks short season teams, you get the horns. Mm. Or the hops, I don't know. But sort of
assist, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah. Warriors don't really have a sense of humor.
Usually no. I kind of want to transition a little back to the Diamondbacks uniform and sort of wrap this up. I'm going to put a question in here at this point, even though question time is supposed to come at the end.
Also,
chaos.
Can I make one last minor league jersey that I love here?
Go for it.
Because it is a Diamondbacks affiliate, the Class A Kane County Cougars had a jersey in 2014 where it was Chewbacca. It's got the bandolier. It's got cougars across the chest and then a lightsaber underneath it.
That's not canon.
That's, you know, okay. Well, Chewbacca used to be canon, but I guess with the removal of the extended universe, there's no longer is Chewbacca's nephew who's a Jedi Knight, unfortunately.
He's part of the Legends line.
He's part of the Legends line. He's just not movie canon.
Well, he was never part of movie canon. Do we want to get into that? Do we want
to? It wasn't G level canon, but
yeah.
Jesus Christ! I'm sorry. I'm so sorry, everyone, that I caused this. So, to the question, I kind of want to have about the Diamondbacks uniforms because I have some thoughts on it, and you might too. You might not. I don't care. This comes from Stephen Burt at Stephen Burt on the Tweety, who's a Snake Pit editor and writer. Do you think the Diamondbacks uniforms are trendsetters or will tees stay traditional? I think, if I may,
sure, go ahead.
I think that there are certain teams that would never try anything like this, and they're mostly your sort of quote unquote like original kind of pre-expansion blue blood teams, like the Yankees would probably never do that.
Right.
The Dodgers never do that.
The ones where people get themselves wet over talking about how good their fan bases are.
Yeah.
Red Sox, yeah.
Yeah. The White Sox, maybe, because they have a history of
taking mescaline and designing uniforms. It's true.
Yeah. The Cubs, yeah. I couldn't see any of those teams doing it. I could maybe see... I don't know if they'd go, like, you know, as far as the Diamondbacks went, if that makes sense. But I could see a team like, say, Tampa Bay or like the Astros, maybe in a decade or so, like doing something more out there, you know, less traditional because they, you know, they're sort of newer relative franchises and they also, you know, have kind of a sort of history of, you know, trying new things. Because, like, you know, the Rays have those like powder blue alternate uniforms, which, you know, that's not like, you know, having the blood on the heel or whatever the Diamondbacks have, but it is sort of by normal baseball standards, very out there. That's what I think.
I don't think it's going to really be a trend-setting thing. Probably the thing, if there's anything, I guess it just depends on what the Diamondbacks do. Because if they hold on to it like a normal set, then it's just a normal set that's maybe awful, maybe not. But if they do change it in a few years, and that might encourage other teams to just kind of continually change, maybe not their home jersey, but at least other ones, or it may influence other teams to look and say, well, do we really need to have just the same basic gray color for the away uniforms? Because that's one of the more radical changes for this new set, is that the away uniform has a very dark gray.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that, actually. That's one thing I do like, generally, is that especially because it contrasts well with, you know, everything else, is that it is a darker gray.
The away and the black with the red shoulders are the two that I like the most.
Yeah,
not that anyone really needed to have that information, but you do now.
You know. Hey, you know things now. The only other team I could ever think of, like, messing with that away formula in any play space is the Padres around like 2006 to like a few years ago when they had those like mustard away uniforms.
Yeah, it was more of a yellowed gray.
Yeah, yeah.
They're getting terrible new uniforms this season though.
The Padres?
Are they? Yeah. I thought they're normal ones with just yellow outlines, aren't they?
Yeah, it looks terrible. It's like mustard yellow. I don't know. I mean, they're not awful, I guess.
They're not as bad as you're making it seem.
No, I just like I think it's really strange to, I don't know. I'm not, the contrast of it's not great.
This may be more influential, and this is worse than what the Diamondbacks did, if you really care about any of this or if you're getting in a huff about it, is that the Padres released this new set. They just released a new set a few years ago when they switched to the blue and white, away from the blue and gray and sand sort of set that they have. So then they went to just straight navy and white. Mm-hmm. Then for this year and this year only, they're adding yellow as a highlight, and they've already said that they're going to re-release or release new uniforms for next year.
Yeah, that seems a bit much.
Right. So that is a trend that other teams may potentially pick up on if there isn't a backlash to it, where like in soccer, which is what the Diamondbacks uniforms remind me of the most, it's traditional for you to not really have any tradition beyond your colors and your badge. So you'll come out with a lot of leagues, you come out with a new home uniform design every 2 years, and you alternate it every other year with a away uniform coming out. So you're always coming out with crazy new stuff. And I wouldn't be surprised if MLB is looking at that and saying, well, why don't we try that? And it's better to try it in some place like Arizona or San Diego, where there isn't going to be quite as much backlash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, yeah, I get that. I see nothing to disagree with there.
Well, dang it.
Neither do I, but that's not going to stop me. I think that you are wrong, Soko.
Dang it.
Yeah. Sorry, pal.
I feel like we've exhausted the uniform.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's just I think it's like it's very striking, but after a week, I'll see them play. I'm gonna get used to it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, like I feel like anybody who's really making a huge fuss over it now, it's not going to be a thing. But
yeah.
Anybody's going to care about in 6 months.
Right. Yeah. And to be fair, we all look pretty dumb when we try and put on official gear.
Oh, God, yeah.
So just embrace it.
Just admit that what you're doing when you put on a jersey is you're cosplaying as a baseball player.
Yes.
Yes.
You bunch of nerds.
Nerds.
So, speaking of segues, moving on. I'll go through very briefly sort of the major transactions the Diamondbacks made in the offseason. There's like there's three I want to highlight. There's others, but I'm just like, about them. But I would say any Diamondbacks fan would agree there's three big ones. And if you don't agree with that, don't comment on that. I don't want that world of mine to be shattered.
Yeah, you should comment on it.
We try to keep Cliffo in his safe space on this podcast. So if you have any actual complaints about the podcast, then I would ask you to sit down, write an email to yourself asking yourself why you're still listening, and move on with your day.
But also be sure to like, listen, and subscribe.
Sure.
Oh, yes.
Tell your friends, not about what you think about the podcast, but that it's here.
Yeah. Yes. It, you know, information wants to be free. Your opinions don't matter, but information wants to be free. First of all, which is totally a phrase, the Diamondbacks signed, I think it was a day after the uniforms came out, actually. Sort of unexpectedly, they signed Zach Greinke, former bastard but now cool guy,
You can edit this part out, but former rat f***er but now cool guy.
There's that line in Major League 2, which is generally bad, but there's where Bob Uecker says, you know, I used to hate Parker with the A's. It's strange what a new uniform does for you. They cover up the microphone and says, he's still a dick. At least he's our jerk now. But
he's a bastard, but he's our bastard.
Yeah.
Plus, we have the added joy of not only is he now our bastard, but there are two other teams in our division who wanted him to be their bastard, and we get to laugh at them.
Where I'm of course referring to Zach Greinke, which you probably already.
I thought you were talking about Sheldon Miller.
I thought we were talking about Julio Perez.
Ooh. Oh, wow. We should really have meetings about this before we talk.
This is why. Oh, wow.
Ooh, just awkward. Yeah, he signed for 6 years and all the money, which is sort of what you have to do with pitchers nowadays, or any big free agent, because they want some guaranteed money, and Major League Baseball may be the only sport whose players' union isn't like totally inept. So, yeah. When it first happened, what was your sort of immediate reaction?
I may have peed a little.
Like a smidge.
I'll be honest. My immediate reaction, I can't quote due to the language restrictions we try to keep on this podcast.
PG-13-ish.
Yeah.
And I've already broken it once. You get one of them in PG-13.
You get one. It's already been used. I was kind of in shock because, you know, I mean, yeah, there'd been like I'd seen a couple things about it, but right. The Diamondbacks are going after Zach Greinke.
Right.
That's hilarious. That's really going to happen, guys.
Yeah, the immediate preceding baseball Twitter before it was announced was basically the Diamondbacks think they're people.
How cute.
So I may have been a bit of a dick on the Twitters. But I don't regret it.
I was kind of in that same boat where when the rumors were announced, my immediate reaction was, oh, that makes sense that they were going to go after him. Probably not going to happen, but I get why they're doing it. It makes sense.
Right.
But when the immediate reaction was, haha, the Diamondbacks think they're people. I may have uploaded a video onto Twitter. Go back in my archive to early December, wherein I put on the audio of the Luis Gonzalez walk-off from 2001, and I just held up a middle finger while smiling, wearing a Diamondbacks hat the whole time, and mouthing, duck shoe.
The finest in aquatic foul footwear.
Yes. Then, when it was announced, my reaction was, holy crap, did this happen? Oh god, everyone else is going to be so angry about this. I love it. And holy crap, our team just got better. And then I uploaded a video of myself drinking very cheap rum while shaking off my Taylor Swift blade. I was in a weird mood that night.
Yeah.
I can link to both of these videos in the post, just so I'm not making this up.
Clefo, I'm going to ask you a question here. Diamondbacks/Broncos fan to one to another. Which surprised you more? The Diamondbacks signing Zach Greinke, who is not named Matt?
Yeah.
Or the Broncos actually winning the Super Bowl? Oh, Devin, wow, you are just amazing today.
I would be very surprised if the Denver Broncos won the Super Bowl, but I would give them a better chance to do so than the Rockies.
Okay.
That's true. Yeah.
I know you guys are both Broncos fans, and you've seen some losses in your day. So I'm gonna let you have this moment. But all three of us have seen the Broncos win three times in our lifetime.
I'm not saying
the Broncos winning the Super Bowl in general. I'm saying this specific instance where Peyton Manning went out on the field with 2.5 functional limbs and apparently was not willing to let anyone else play.
Mm-hmm.
We were heavy underdogs, and that was even in general.
Every game they won in the playoffs, I was like, how the F did that happen?
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I get what Soka was saying, being a Bills fan, but just at the sort of general. But yeah, I was more surprised. I think I was more surprised as Zach Greinke, because like Soka said, I have seen the Broncos win a Super Bowl in my lifetime. I know it's possible. I have seen the Diamondbacks sign a free agent as well, but not in this current market of,
you know, in a while.
Of like,
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So kind of both. I mean, I don't know. That I know that's a Weasley answer, but
it's really not even an answer at all.
It was very staggering and amazing, because, and that's the highest, you know, just total money pitcher contract in Major League Baseball history up to this point, I believe. And so yeah,
and to see that from the Diamondbacks was just,
yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe, you know, clearing out salary from, I don't know, whoever.
Well, a large part of it's going to be that massive contract that they signed.
The TV deal?
Because they, I mean, part of it was a $50 million signing bonus that was going to be spread out over 3 years.
Yeah.
And that's not what they're going to get paid for their rights. That's just a bonus, essentially, on top of what the deal actually is. So,
yeah, and you know, then they have whatever per year, but yeah, so yeah, that definitely helped. Right. Yeah, and some of his salary is deferred. It's not like Jerry Colangelo era deferred, but it's
where I believe we're still actually paying off some of the concessionaires from the 2001 season right now.
I think honestly, like no joke, I think Bernard Gilkey gets paid off at the end of this year.
Is he the last one?
I think he's the last one.
They should have a ceremony where they bring him in and like they bring him in, give him his last check. Retire like, his payment account.
One of those giant novelty checks. Yeah. The Red Sox? He wore 28 with the Red Sox. Yeah. More you know. But it was sort of the first big shot fired in the offseason, because you might recall earlier, I kind of felt like it was, you know, it was like that earlier that week or the week before, I don't quite remember, they tried to sign Johnny Cueto, and it apparently wasn't enough money for him.
Right.
And so I thought, oh, this is kind of like the same thing again.
Yeah.
But it wasn't.
Yeah, that was another case of people being like, haha, the Diamondbacks think they're people.
But yeah, Zach Greinke, so the Diamondbacks pitching staff, which I think anyone would agree was their big weakness last year. Again, you might not, but again, we have referenced Metzgelin before in this podcast, so you know.
Actually, I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that referring to the Diamondbacks pitching as our weakness last year is probably one of the more fundamentally indisputable things we've ever said on this podcast.
So they thought, oh, we have one pitcher, why not get another? And so
we do need more than one. Surprisingly.
You need at least five. Possibly more for relievers, whatever. Something bootstraps, but so the Diamondbacks decided to trade with the Atlanta Braves again, and under this current Diamondbacks administration, that has always gone over so well with people.
Oh, yeah.
They decided to acquire Shelby Miller for the Braves, who has
a name
who fairly, yes, and has been fairly solid, and as of last year, very good. You know, or they could keep that up. I don't know. Who cares? We all die eventually. But to give up to what they gave up for Shelby Miller was Dansby Swanson, RIP, Ender and CRT, also RIP, and Aaron Blair, also. They're all dead now, so you know.
You're at the crossroads.
Bum, 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 bum. That may be like the fifth or sixth time that we've referenced that song on this podcast, so.
I have to say, of the players that we gave up in that trade, I think the one I'm most disappointed to lose is Dansby Swanson. not necessarily for his actual potential pitching prowess. He is a pitcher, right?
Yeah.
Shortstop. Well, he could have been if he tried harder.
Bootstraps.
But just because that's a good name to say. That's a fun name to say. Dansby Swanson.
It gives me like a, always gave me a vague image of like a boat captain. Yeah, I don't know why.
Like very, like he seems like he would have been a background character in a Mark Twain novel.
Right.
In my
Or like a side character in Great Gatsby. I say, old sport.
Dansby Swanson. Yeah, I think really the only thing that's keeping me from being too upset over that is my excitement over the fact that Socrates Brito, my number one name prospect on the Diamondbacks, is...
He might be the number one name prospect.
He might, I mean, it's... Yeah. Yeah.
I can't think of anyone else, but, you know, you mentioned Socrates Brito to a neutral fan. They're like, it's, you know, it's like a... Yeah, it's just like a ray of sunshine. But my... thoughts on the trade itself. I'm not going to get into too much of the hot things. Like, yeah, it sort of sucks to give up a future talent. But should that trade push the Diamondbacks over the top within the next 2 to 3 years or whatever? Flags fly forever, motherfucker. So you could take your prospect list and we'll just take a World Series where you can shove it up your ass, Atlanta. How do you like me now?
Okay, I just a minor step back when we were talking about Dansby Swanson and what his name sounds like. I just looked at his listing on Google, and his father's name is Cooter Swanson, and he just sounds like he lives.
I
in
say
a very small.
Oh dear.
Anyway, yeah, no.
That Cooter Swanson, he's a good dude. Sold me a hubcap once.
Didn't even need one. He was just carrying it around. Yeah. Like, you need a hubcap, bro. We are in mid-season form.
Any opinion I have about Sheldon Miller is now grossly overshadowed over thinking about Cooter Swanson.
And that's his brother,
that's
you said?
His father.
So, anyway.
I'm not a prospect hugger, so yeah. I'm not worked up about it. Beyond that, Dansby Swanson is a great name. And I like making Ender jokes about Ender Inciarte. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's that is true. That's a loss as well.
Yeah.
But it's sort of evened out by the very vanilla Aaron Blair, so
Know. Who did Ender get traded for in the book? Rat? He got a rat.
Something like that.
Possibly. He got traded in it too, so
he got
traded too,
that's true. So he might basically what we're saying is next season Ender Inciarte may start his own team.
He might become
they
a
will win
and win
everything. 20 World Series in a row.
Yes.
And then he'll go play one more World Series and realize that this one wasn't just the World Series. Spoiler alert, it was like the Galaxy Series.
Yes. And that he's been committing horrific, horrific genocide the whole time.
I don't know what the baseball equivalent of war crimes is. I think it's probably like bunting to break up a perfect game. But he's done that. He is doing that.
Yeah. Yes. So I'm not too worked up about it because, like I sort of did in my fake wrestling pro over there, that in all seriousness, if the Diamondbacks win a World Series or something within the time that Sheldon Miller is here, not having Dansby Swanson in 2025, it's like who gives a shit? We have a World Series,
right?
Yeah, no, I mean, like I'm not. I understand that. I understand the team's in a win now mode, and you know what? If they're going to go for it, freaking go for it. And I'm not going to get myself too worked up about what this prospect could be doing in 3 years, because a lot of things can happen in 3 years. And
we all, including all the prospects, could
it's
be
true.
Dead.
Especially if Ender Inciarte does not save us. No, like, it's one of the things that I kind of find infuriating sometimes when people talk about prospects, is because people will be very big on the, oh, there's no such thing as a pitching prospect. Any pitching prospect can blow out their arm at a moment's notice. They could high-five somebody in a 7-Eleven and their arm could fall off.
Uh-huh.
I think that actually happened to somebody. He may have been in the Marlins rotation. I'm not sure.
That may have happened to.
This sounds like something that would happen in Miami.
Yeah,
or to like Mark Pryor or something.
It was actually. Oh no, that's right. It was somebody high-fived Dusty Baker in a 7-Eleven, and their arm fell off.
He's a manager again.
Oh no, that's unfortunate for pitchers. But on the other hand, when you get to training prospects, sometimes people are so focused and dead set on this is what this player could become.
I could understand maybe sort of thinking, trying to maximize a perceived value. But the thing is, like, the perceived value of a schlub who comments on, you know, snake pit articles is different than what the sort of industry perceived value is.
Yes. That is true.
You know
that
what I mean?
True. And incidents like Paul Goldschmidt, where we were right, does not necessarily mean that we can laugh at every other prospect person.
I've read somewhere that, like, if a minor leaguer or a prospect just makes it to the majors and sticks there, no matter how good they are, there was an argument that, like, you could consider them kind of a success if that's the sort of bar.
Yeah.
How could they be considered a success?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But some people's like,
well, those people are,
I don't know,
idiots. I'm sorry. There's no way that you can tell me that someone who doesn't become part of less than 1% of the best baseball players in the world and then makes hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, even at league minimum, you're making about $400,000 a year. If you could build a career out of that, even if you're just in the league a few years, that's freaking success. I'm sorry.
Yeah, like our old friend who's not with us anymore because he plays for a different team, Chad Pennington. you would consider him like a sort of marginal-ish defensive first, like middle infielder type. But he was like a first round pick. But if you think about it, like,
he's done well for himself.
I'm trying to find 2000. Let me, 2005 MLB draft. Hold on one second. If you see, like, he made the majors, like, carved out a pretty good career. There are guys here. Do you know who CJ Henry is? Of course you don't. But he was drafted before Chad in that draft. So, you know, I think,
Oh, my God.
Chad in his career has made about $10 million. That's to this point. So, I mean, I don't feel like any of us can really look at a guy who's made $10 million and be like, wow, you're just mediocre.
Yeah, exactly. This guy has been in the league for quite a while, and he may not be a Hall of Fame player. He may not even be a great player, but in the grand scheme of things, he is. I was attempting to look up his what he has made collectively over his career, and I actually did search Chad Pennington. So, whoops. Which there was one.
So, yes. So, that's the Shelley Miller trade. The other big trade, we're kind of running a little long right now, and I kind of want to get to, like, a few questions, but we'll touch briefly on...
Touch me.
Editing that out. I want to touch on the Aaron Hill, Chase Anderson, Gene Segura, Brewers, brouhaha.
I've already forgotten about that, so...
That's one I genuinely, and not to be like postmodern and ironic, but I genuinely have a very hard time getting upset about that anything.
I'm not too worked up on it. I feel like Gene Segura has a chance to turn around because he had a bad season last year. Is that right?
Yeah.
Past couple seasons. He's got a chance to turn things around. Obviously the Diamondbacks, whatever they were doing to work with their offense last year was working.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can take that and apply it to Gene Segura and get him hitting a little bit better and he plays decent defense, then great.
Yeah. And if you think about it, you had Aaron Hill, who was a crappy old expensive middle infielder. If you trade him for a kind of crappy young middle infielder, I feel that's better.
Yeah.
Cheap. That's cheap. And the thing that kind of pisses me off about this trade is that people's like, shortstop is at Diaz. Who's that? Oh, wow, he's had 30 games of a professional career and hit really well. So obviously the Diamondbacks are dumb. It's like mother effer, you did not hear. You had to Google that guy. You did not know who he was like an hour ago. Don't pretend that this is some great coup. I mean, it very well could be, but don't like with any prospect, don't assume it's a sure thing.
Yeah, no, I feel like there's an unfortunate tendency for people to, especially in the off season, to look at stats and take that as the like extrapolate that into areas that aren't necessarily applicable, to just assume that the best of one person's stats and the worst of another's.
Exactly.
And yeah, no, I will avoid the rant that I have in the back of my head there. So
my feelings about this trade really can be summed up with, you started this segment by saying who we traded to get Gene Segura, and I've already forgotten what you said.
Aaron Hill is gone. That's what matters.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Hallelujah.
And I feel like that alone right there, that makes me okay with the trade.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah. Let's wrap up hello with a few questions. This will probably be a kind of longish episode, even after I edit it down, which I don't care. If you complain about that, I know who you are, your screen name, and you're going to anyway. But
you know, Jim does still run the website. I mean, we can't complain too much about him.
Yeah. Well, I was subtweeting.
I know. It's okay.
Never. Yeah. Okay. So this. I'll do like three questions. We actually got quite a few from basically like three people, but this comes from Steve Burt again, who had that question about the uniforms way like an hour ago. He asks, you already answered this on Twitter, Soko, but I'm going to ask it again to everyone. How would you change baseball so youngsters start playing more?
How'd I change baseball so youngsters start playing more?
I have a thought about this. Basically, I actually wouldn't change much, but I would make it so that cranky old people didn't control the narrative so much. Because honestly, like, I feel like that's a kind of a big thing. That's kind of like a big thing. It's like, baseball's history is sort of like a really good strength of his, but it's also kind of an anchor. Like, back in my day, you know, Hank Aaron used to bench press tree trunks, and all he needed was a good hearty breakfast. Hank Aaron was a bad example because he's not white, but you know what I mean.
Ty Cobb. All he needed was a good hearty breakfast, and by good hearty breakfast, we mean a couple of shots and to swear at an African-American servant.
A couple shots is rating him a little low.
It could be.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I need bullets.
Oh.
But I think, like, baseball's history is kind of amazing if you study it, but I think we can kind of get too far up our own asses about it.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll get
and especially. Yeah, exactly. Just way more sexier. And I think there's also, like, at least for kind of people around kind of our vague age, is that, you know, now sports writers, or a good portion of them, not all of them, there's pushback as this sort of wants to sort of discredit the kind of baseball we grew up watching, which, to be fair, was, you know, so pumped up full of, you know, various substances that various records felt, but, I mean, if you look at it, no era has been particularly clean, so why this sort of line in the sand was being drawn has always confused me.
Do you want to know the horrible, horrible truth? Or do you want to see Dingers. Mark McGuire hit some dingers?
And by hit some dingers, he means bludgeon the Rockies mascot with
the bat. Yeah, no, definitely. I'm doubly excited for that.
Yes. But the game itself, you know, things like, you know, sort of speeding up the breaks between play, that's all well and good. But I think, like, you know, the sort of appeal of baseball isn't generational, like, it's more universal, but I think there's just, like, it's like gatekeeping, I guess. That's what I think kind of turns people off. I could be wrong.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay, thanks. I don't think I have enough data to really prescribe a cure, just simply because, is it true in the first place, the underlying assumption that kids don't play baseball? You know, is there a demonstrable decline in the participation? Or is there a decline, but it happens after a certain year, so they play, and then with the rise of all these travel teams and increased competition, I mean, one of my employees, his kid is a pitcher in high school now, and when he first got hired, he was in junior high. But that kid plays baseball all year long, and that's basically the only sport that he does. It's just baseball all year long, and that's the way it is now. So it could be that a lot of kids get into it at the beginning, but they get weeded out fairly quickly because of this highly competitive nature. And they instead get shifted towards something that they have more of a talent in, as opposed to kind of just plodding along and being good enough. Instead, either their parents push them off, or they themselves say, I don't want to do this anymore because I'm not good enough. So I'm going to find something I am good at. So that may have some impact on it. It could be the cost of the game. It could be just simply that you have to have a lot of players, which kind of goes back to cost. Because you can play a good, reasonable game of basketball or soccer both cheaply and with virtually no players. But I would not be shocked if the youth participation thing is closely rooted to, if we could see a decline in age participation, is more rooted in kids basically specializing, you know, at an earlier age, instead of having more of a general wide-ranging education and recreation schedule. Instead, it's more like, okay, well, you've shown some sort of talent in music, so therefore you are going to continue to do music, and hey, you're okay baseball player, but you aren't really that good. It's something that, I mean, even not that I'm that young or that old, but it's something I remember hearing and seeing with other kids, where it got to a point when you're in junior high or high school, it's like, well, what's the point really in wasting your time doing this and getting that signal from other people? Like, you're not really that good at this. Sure, you may enjoy it, but it's not going to help you in the long run with these other more important goals, like getting college education or getting into the rat race or whatever else. So I wouldn't be shocked if there's a lot of kids who just simply like playing baseball when they're a kid, you know, when they're 6 or 10 or whatever, but very quickly get driven out.
I feel like, I mean, I was thinking of something very similar, where I feel like baseball itself is, it's like, it's the one main sport that it's not exactly something you can do like casually. Like, you can get like a couple of people and you go play basketball. Okay. Well, you play offense, you play defense. You go play, you know, flag football or something. Okay, are you the quarterback? No, then you're a wide receiver. And then you're on defense. Whereas baseball, it's, okay, well, are you an outfielder? Are you infielder? Are you going to pitch? You know, are you playing shortstop? I feel like there... And then also, like, you can go play basketball for 15 minutes if you want. You can't really play a 15-minute game mm-hmm. of baseball unless you're just going to go out and hit ground balls to a friend.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like the investment, both money and time-wise, and in looking for a more specific skill set is probably going to discourage people. I mean, honestly, the first thing that comes to mind asking what I would do to make it more popular among people playing is I would hype up vintage baseball. we've all played it, and I will tell everybody listening, we're three internet nerds. I mean, none of us are really great athletes. None of us were like the best vintage players, but it was fun. Basically, you need a field, a ball, and a bat. You don't have to worry about everybody has a glove. You don't need a lot of very specific equipment for it. I feel like it's something that it's possible to play a lot more casually. It's also the skill set is, or the rule set is built for a little less rigorous demand in your skills.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that might help increase the number of players. That would be a guess for me.
Yeah.
Don't say I'm not a thing. I could run like 200, maybe 150 yards without losing. So
on a good day, I can make it all the way to third base.
Thank you for listening to Infield Chatter. If you like this or didn't, please leave a comment. That's the only way I know that people listen to this. Hopefully within the next few weeks, we'll get guests of some sort, especially for spring training, because let's face it, spring training gets kind of dull after a while. Hot take! Join us every Sunday from here on this website, usually around the evening. But yeah, that's happening. See ya!